Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me today in the studio for University Matters, Dr. Ruth Faldson. Dr. Faldson is a lecturer in the Department of Counselling in the new Faculty for Social Wellbeing, about which we might hear something later on. Her main areas of interest are dyslexia, literacy, and personal social development, commonly known as PSD. She's particularly interested in voluntary work and is actually treasurer of the Malta Association for the Counselling Profession and also the International Association for Counselling. She's on the executive board of the Malta Dyslexia Association and also the Malta PSD Association and the Association for Professionals in Learning Disabilities. So she's come to speak to us today about dyslexia and the situation in Malta and the potential of those people who are affected by it. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Faldson.
Thank you.
Perhaps initially it would be of benefit if you could give a little bit of an overview of dyslexia, what it is, what it means, and how it affects people everywhere, but people in Malta, of course.
Dyslexia, as the word itself implies, is difficulty with words. And in this case, difficulty to learn how to read and write, which doesn't mean you don't learn how to read and write. But the majority of children with dyslexia would have difficulty learning how to read and write. Then we have another smaller percentage for whom it is extremely difficult and who will end up, you know, using other means of communication to access print and to communicate through the printed text. It also may bring about with it shorter memory difficulties, organization difficulties, language processing difficulties. Having said that, if you look at the literature, you may perceive dyslexia from two aspects. You can either see it as a disability or as a difficulty in the brain, or you can see it as a different profile. What do I mean? What we're finding is that persons with dyslexia, although they have difficulty in learning how to read and write, they also tend to be very creative. They tend to be very strong visually. In fact, they make very good plastic surgeons, very good architects, very good inventors. In fact, in one of my lectures, I always say, is it by chance that the person who invented the light bulb and the person who invented the telephone were both with a profile of dyslexia? So, and then one queries. And also, if you look at brain activity of adults who read well, and some of them would have a profile of dyslexia and some of them would not, but they're reading exactly the same way, you will see that what is happening in the brain is different. So you may say that they have a different way where different pathways are being used in order for them to access print. Also in a context where literacy is not part of the normal activity of a human being. You know, a child learns how to speak automatically here. Yeah. But reading, you have to explicitly teaching. One can also view reading and writing as if it were a circus act or as if it were a talent. Now, if in our culture, singing were to be as important as reading and writing, half of us would be this music. So you may tend to say, is it that the person has a problem or is it society who have imposed a problem? I remember when I was young, my left hand was tied so I could write with my right, and I still remember.
Really?
Yes,
you're,
I'm cross-lettering.
You're very young for that kind of attitude.
Yes, I'm cross-lettering. I still remember. I'm still upset that I'm supposed to be writing with my left hand, but I write with my right. I still do a lot of things with the left. But, and sort of we've passed that. And that was a time when they felt it was wrong that people wrote with their left hand. And here, we're sort of, what does it have to do with reading? My message is, I think in a number of societies, and particularly Malta, we still seem to be tied down to the concept that academics equals reading and writing. And I think that is a very closed way of looking at education. I can understand from where it's coming historically, because the academic learning came out of convents, and sort of then in around the 18th century had academic learning and apprenticeships, you know, and those two seemed to respect all types of intelligences. Then when education became compulsory, we did not respect all intelligences. So this is, goes beyond dyslexia, because if you look at academic learning, particularly how it's happening in Malta, we are respecting left-brained people who are logical, mathematical and verbal. What about the rest? So from the time kids started kindergarten, we are disservicing them. And that is being translated in a lot of frustration in children, particularly in starting the upper primary and secondary schools, and translating itself in big behavior management challenges in the classroom.
Before going more into detail about the effects of dyslexia on people, from the actual physical point of view, you said that sort of the connections aren't quite the same in people who have dyslexia. People talk about reversing letters, reversing numbers. What exactly happens when somebody's reading and they actually have dyslexia?
Okay. First of all, I'm going to as if they're over seven, because there's a learning curve, and when they're five and six, there are already signs which will indicate to me that the child is going to have difficulties reading and writing. But then at seven, we confirm that it's not a late. It's not part of the development, but that is a difficulty. The most common is they say people change the B's and D's. That is one of the difficulties, which means that when they look at a letter, which is an arbitrary sign meaning something, they forget if it's a B, a D, or a P, or a Q. And there are techniques to help them. That's one. They may also have difficulty with what is called phonological and phonemic awareness, in the sense that language is made up of sounds. So if I say cat, if I change one phoneme and make it into fat or sat or pat, I am changing the whole meaning of the word. So every phoneme is very important. Now, if I have a child who cannot split the word cat into three sounds, k, a, t, or vice versa, then he's going to have difficulties reading our language, because our language is what is called an alphabetic code type of language. It is not logographic, so our writing is not attached to a picture. We have a more effective and efficient system of reading, where using 28 letters, which symbolize in English around 44 to 55 sounds, we can make up millions of words. It's not like a logographic system. So if that child has difficulty sounding out, then he's going to have difficulties learning how to read. For example, we'll have young children who will not seem to have problems at 6 or at 7, but then once they hit 8, ooh, big problems. What would be happening there is that they would be bright children, they would be picking up the words as sight words, as pictures. So as a 6-year-old, as a 7-year-old, the number of words are enough for them to cope with. But once they hit the fourth year, third year of primary school, there are too many words for the system to cope with. So the system collapses. Just to give you an idea, children using a logographic code learn how to read, with regard to number of words, 6 times slower than a child using an alphabetic code. For example, our year one students, readers in Malta, would be reading 6 times as many words as a Mandarin child who uses a logographic code. So our system is much more efficient. But for children with difficulties, we need to find alternative means. Now, the system which helps such children how to read is called structured, systematic, multisensory approach to reading, which works for everybody. So it is an inclusive strategy which can be used from the beginning of school, and then children with dyslexia will be in a much better position to learn as much as their peers. So when we talk about difficulties in reading, one has to be careful. I sometimes joke, a number of our kids learn how to read in spite, not because of the teacher. So we really have to look into ourselves as professionals of how we can help.
Does it actually affect numerical reading as well?
Yes. Well, let me clarify. Children with dyslexia can have difficulty with math because of the reading aspect, and then I'll explain that. And that is different from dyscalculia or dyscalculia, because dyscalculia is difficulty with the understanding of numbers. Now, children with dyslexia may have difficulty with math because of the reading, because math is a language. When I am seeing 3 plus 2 equals, I am reading. So the child with dyslexia may read 3 minus 2 and come up with the wrong answer. And that the person who's helping him needs to be careful. Is it conceptual, the issue, or is it an issue of reading? We have a number of children with dyslexia for whom you will say a sum. I have 3 balls and I lose 2. How many do I have left? And they'll say 1. And they'll say, how did you work it out? No idea. And what that means is that they are working math from the right brain, and they still haven't shifted to the left brain. They still haven't made it into a language. They have difficulty with the times table, and that's because of the auditory short-term challenges they would have. So children like that would not have difficulty with maths conceptually, but, as you said, a numerical, reading numerical. Or, for example, they will say 81 and write 18. They will say 371 and write 317, because they will have problems with sequencing. But that is, I regard it as reading difficulty, but reading the math language. So,
and when the dyslexic children actually speak, when it comes to the spoken word, how does it affect them? Does it affect them at all, really? Do they have problems with
there are when you say dyslexia, there are different manifestations of dyslexia. Some children have no difficulty with language. Some children would have difficulty with organizing what to say. Some children would have difficulties retrieving a word. For example, they'll say, oh, you speak through it. It makes your sound goes louder. You hold it like that, but they can't get the word microphone out. That's called the word retrieval. They may have fluency problems, organization and difficulty. They're all related, because you may have a language difficulty which then borders also on the reading and writing. There are different manifestations, and I think one needs to appreciate, even when we look at children, at first they are children, first they are adults, then they are adults with dyslexia. And even the manifestations is very different from how some of them will read fast and with a lot of mistakes. Some of them will read so slowly they can't remember what they've read at the top of the page. So there are a lot of manifestations, and I think it would be better if we were to see the difficulty as a continuum, you know. And also, what the literature is showing us today is that comorbidity is the rule, not the exception. So having dyslexia only is more the exception than the rule. You may have dyslexia and attention difficulties, dyslexia and organization difficulties, dyslexia and sequencing difficulty, or the short-term memory difficulties. So usually you'll find more than one difficulty within, or one challenge, I'd like to say, rather than difficulty within the individual.
Nowadays, of course, we're aware of dyslexia. Most people have heard of it, at least. And in the schools, I presume teachers are actually trained to look out for it, or is that not the case?
I don't teach any literacy or dyslexia within the BEd course. But my review of what is happening in the BEd is that more needs to be done. They do have credit on dyslexia, but I feel more needs to be done. For your question with regard to awareness, I think nowadays, if you were to ask even any Tom, Dick and Harry, they would say, hey, dyslexia, difficulty with reading and writing. But then they don't actually internalize what that means. For example, one of the difficulties I find in schools is persuading the school that this particular child has difficulty copying and what it means for him to copying. And the insistence that he has to copy, which I consider child abuse if the child has difficulty copying. So I say yes and no, because they do understand that it's difficulty with reading and writing, but you don't actually internalize what it means. And perhaps that is happening because you may perhaps not be able to fathom how it could be difficult for you for something which for you find so easy. And that I can understand and deal with, but then I will not accept that you will not, you're not opening to listening what I am trying to explain to you, what it means to be in a classroom with a profile of dyslexia. So my answer to that is yes and no.
And a child who finds him or herself in a class, what really are the the challenges. You've mentioned copying, for example.
Uh-huh, that's one example. For example, a number of our children with dyslexia would also have what is called slow processing. So even though I am speaking now normally, although perhaps at a rather fast pace, for the child it would seem as if I were talking at breakneck speed. So he wouldn't be coping. So it's as if he's trying to, you know, just to keep have enough breathing space above water to cope, which is not a nice way, because we want our children to be relaxed when they are learning. And so what the teacher needs to do is to be aware of it and use stretches like a slight pauses or the use of pictures or the agreement with the student that he doesn't have to write anything and he'll be provided with the notes, you know. Well, frankly, for me, I cannot understand this issue of copying from the board in this day and age of technology, where she can click a button and off they go to the student. So for me, that's a waste of precious learning time from the student. But that's another story. They may also have difficulty attending. Their attendance may waver, and they may be too distracted. Also, they may be so disheartened at the concept that they're not going to achieve that they simply shut off. So the teacher would say he's not paying attention, and then it would be an emotional difficulty which you need to handle. So there are different issues. What I find is, when I talk to teachers, is if they go from the standpoint that they respect the student and they are ready to support him, the student feels safer. Our students, for example, and a comment which often comes, he doesn't participate. He doesn't put his hand up. Yes, but he's so afraid he'll make a mistake. And the question is my error because I'm dyslexic, or is it normal for me to make such an error? And they cannot afford not to know. So they live in a very shaky world. Another thing which I forgot to mention when we talk about children with dyslexia, one of the things which really upsets them is what is called inconsistent performance. Now, what that means, now I know it, now I don't. It's as if I get into my car today, I know I have to start and use my gears. Tomorrow I get in, what do I have to do? So, and it can be something they know today and something then they not know tomorrow. And then instead of we celebrating when they're getting right, we chastise them when they get it wrong because they're playing up or because they're lazy or because they're not interested. And they really can't understand because they really and truly cannot remember. And also this often happens because people misinterpret the lack of memory as lack of understanding. It's different. So when the child comes home and can't do his homework, the person may say, he didn't understand what happened in school. Well, no, he'd have understood and forgotten. If you've forgotten, you have to start the learning all over again.
In fact, this is what I'm wondering, as the next step would be, how do you turn a vicious circle within the classroom context? The sort of, he looks as though he's not paying attention, therefore he gets chastised, therefore he won't want to do anything, into a virtuous circle.
I think, and this I think is not only for children with dyslexia, it's for all children, is not to be judgmental and not to take your first stance as a negative reason. So, okay, he's not attending, he's careless. You're not paying attention. Is everything okay? Now, if he really wasn't paying attention, he's going to come back to you. If something's wrong, he's going to come back to you and he'll say, yes, miss, we'll talk about it later. But you've brought him or her back into the circle of learning. Teachers, it's important that they use visuals. The visuals ground every child. And also children who have auditory memory difficulties. It's also important that you present material that is dyslexia friendly. If you're going to present material that is dyslexia friendly, no one's going to be put at a disadvantage because it helps everyone. For example, the research shows that if you use sans serif fonts, it's easier to read. Now, sans serif fonts is the font people use on the internet because the screen may move slightly, so if there's a serif font, it would affect reading much more than if it were sans serif. Yet we are still using Times Roman, which is one of the most difficult fonts to read, for our national exams. And the reason I've been given it is because it looks good. It looks good because you've been used to it. But if you use, for example, Century Gothic, which is just a click cover but is not going to cost us anything, our children will be at a much easier position to be able to cope with the exam paper. Or, for example, I still see it using a text with the questions on the other side of the sheet, where a child with auditory difficulties is going to have to shift pages all the time, or a diagram with the questions on the other side of the sheet. These are all little things which mean a lot to someone who is having difficulties. I mean, and even if you look at any child, he's going to get frustrated flipping pages. So let's try and do them as inclusive. And I always like to use the principle, does it really matter? The DERM principle, I call it. Does it really matter? Does it really matter if the exam papers are presented in a serif or a sans serif font for the aim of the exam? No. So why? These are the things which literally drive me up the wall.
I'd like to see that.
Quite true.
I know that you're involved with performance with regard to dyslexia. Perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about that.
That has, in February of 2008 or 9, I believe, I received an invitation that someone with a profile of severe dyslexia was going to launch a book. A very cold September night. I almost said, oh, it's too cold, let me not go, but I went. It was at St. James Cavalier. And thank God I went. There was a performance by Matthew Scarfield and Clara Jules, which was breathtaking in its honesty and also in the way he projected. And then about a year later, I said, we need to do something more. I communicated with Matthew, and we sort of devised a project where we would ask youngsters with dyslexia to do workshops. Because Matthew believed, and I believe too, and it's also in the literature, that drama can help self-esteem. And from drama, we actually moved on to performance ethnography, which is a research which includes performance and writing up about it. And we did a whole year meeting these students, and these students didn't want to stop meeting. The funds ran out. So we are presently meeting once a month at my house, so we don't spend money, and the kids keep on coming. And what the parents are telling is the kids, through this drama, and because it's on the person, we've now moved on to calling it performance ethnography, they are becoming empowered. First of all, the kids tell me we are meeting kids who are having the same experience, and that is empowering. They are sharing their experience. And instead of, I'll tell you a couple of incidences, of having the parent having to go, or me having to go for a meeting to explain to the teachers, No, now they do it. For example, I've got one young lady. I can say her name because I actually presented at a conference and they become co-researchers and their name is on the paper. So I can say her name. Valentina, she told me, I went up to every teacher and I told her, please, miss, I do like to read, but I have difficulty reading. It's called dyslexia. When you're going to ask me to read, give me the passage a day before so I can prepare it. And this year, nobody needed to go to school. And sort of they find it empowering, even though they're still finding school struggling. And this is the beauty of it. They struggle at school, but they want to achieve. And for example, I have one other boy. He that would be interesting for you to meet. I have one other boy. He's doing his O-level now. He's a poet. He's already published a book. And when he spoke to me that he was publishing the book, his name is Shane. Again, I can say it because I have their permission. I told him, Shane, do the poems listen to what I'm saying, in your spelling and in standard spelling. So the poems like that. And I use standard spelling on purpose because it is a spelling which, as a community, we decided to use. And the matter of correctness or incorrectness comes later. So it's standard spelling. And he's already published a book. Very poignant ideas, very adult ideas, very good language. Yet I do not think he's going to pass his SEC because of his spelling. And that for me is heartbreaking. Because we have big authors, big novelists, Yeats, poet, dyslexia, Flaubert, considered one of the best French novelists, I believe, because I don't know French and I haven't read him. Agatha Christie. These are big names. Tolkien. And this is where we need to move away from, because in order for me to write a good book, I don't need to know how to spell. I need to know the language. So, for example, Matthew has written three books. He's never touched a pen. He simply uses Dragonfly, which is a computer-assisted technology where you speak into it and it produces what you want to say in such a way that you can pass what you want to say to another person in another space and time. And this is where is the problem is, because what is writing and reading? Reading is the ability to understand what another person is saying in another space and time. Now, when it was invented, writing was the innovative way of doing it. Today we have other innovative way of doing it, which do not read the use of the hand to move around to pass your message. And perhaps that is what we need to think about when we're insisting, for example, that exams you need to read and write. What are you assessing? Let's take, for example, the credit I'm lecturing now, which is psychology of learning. Now, what is my responsibility? My responsibility is that I know that this student understands the theories of learning. In this particular study unit, my method of assessment is a multiple choice exam. Now, why did I choose a multiple choice exam? Because I want to know if they understand the content. So, but does it really matter if the students read the question and mark the answer, or that the question is read to the candidate and he marks the correct answer, which you read to him? For the purpose of my credit, no. I don't care if he doesn't read or write. I care if he understands Piaget and generative epistemology, Vygotsky's social historical theory, because that is my brief to my society. But we don't seem to distinguish the two, and that concerns me a lot.
Well, unfortunately, we run out of time.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. No problem at all. Thank you so much, Dr. Ruth Palazzon, for coming to talk to us about dyslexia. I'm sure it will have raised a lot of interest amongst our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.